I just want to question something. We always have a landscape plan.
Yeah, I was going to say, we always have a...
I would take exception to that.
To Mr. Sinclair's point, that's a fairly old subdivision, and actually, his point's well taken, is that, you know, we would see site plans during public hearings that were the greenest things you've ever seen in your whole life. You know, there's trees everywhere in these older ones. And, you know, then at the end of the day, when the thing's built, there weren't trees anywhere, you know? And so, a lot of the conditions that go on subdivisions are to hold people to what they're saying in a public hearing, so that, you know, you have to supply now a landscape plan with your subdivision that shows all the trees, not just in the perimeter buffers, but the trees that are going to be planted, the plantings, everything else. And actually, that goes into bonding requirements as well. So, unfortunately, yours is an older one that you're in, but, you know, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, we sort of learned that lesson, you know? Because the other thing is, you know, with the subdivisions that are 10 years old in terms of when they're built, more than likely they're 15 years old in terms of when they went through the process. So, you know, we have tried to make that better so that, you know, that doesn't happen. So.
And I think we all could say that there are so many variables on every development. I, going back and forth to work every day, have this one beautiful community on the one side. There's all these mounds with now beautiful trees that have all grown. Of course, it's been there for a bit. But then completely opposite on the other side, there's a tree that's just every so often. So this side, you don't even know that there's homes and stuff over there. This side, I'm watching the people sitting on their back deck. I get it. And but there has to be a happier medium for all of that. I personally like the walled, screened fact that I don't have to see what's there, but.
I concur. You know, driving down my road every day, you know, on Old Landing near the end, you're to the left is a newer development that I'm not going to name. To the right are a bunch of older developments that actually do have better landscaping than what's built on the left. And, you know, you can see into everybody on the left's back, you know, porches into their residences. It's just, it's awful.
And the example that I gave, they, I'm sure, would exceed whatever we're even trying to increase to. But it, again, it goes a lot back to the developer and people's personal preference of what they like.
Yeah. And I would say, like I said before, it was the unintended but significant consequence of all the drainage. We really, the county, and I don't remember when, but it was, you know, say it was 10 years ago, really made an effort because we were seeing lots of developments that there wasn't a grading plan. That's one of the conditions we have, you know, now, and there wasn't a mass grading plan. And we were seeing swales that were flooding and
that's the flip side of
flooding.
It.
Yeah, you know, and so.
It sounds great to try to watch the natural flow like Mr. Wall, but sometimes that's just not doable,
you know,
when you got to build up a lot here and now you got,
right.
Yeah, from the construction side, but okay. Who else would like to speak? Anyone? Nope. Okay. Anybody else have any other questions or comments from up here?
I was looking at him like,
you waited too long.
Ben. Motion to adjourn. Motion
Ben,
to adjourn.
You must have woken him up.
I feel the love.
We do love you, Mr. Hutt. You know that.
I'm sorry, everyone. I tried.
And you caught me by surprise. I was frankly, I was looking at something on my phone.
See?
So you almost...
stared at him and he came walking
home. I was like, he's just here. He's not going to see.
Look what you did.
Okay, sorry.
I did look up and I saw Mr. Robertson looking at me. I was like, oh. And with the...
I don't think you gave us your name for the record.
Sorry. David Hutt with the law firm of Morris James. Frankly, what I was going to comment on has been commented on by everybody, so I'm not going to repeat that. To me, clearly the definition of a forest is unenforceable at law. I would agree with what you heard from Mr. Horner regarding that. Frankly, it sounds like Mr. Sinclair would agree, I don't know that he would agree about the legal ramifications of it, but would agree that the definition of forest needs some attention. I would support the Land Use Reform Working Group's definition of forest. And it was interesting, Mr. Horner and I were sitting back there. You know, Mr. Robertson set himself up because he said, yeah, we would look at it in 2 weeks before Well, but where does that stop? Is it 4 weeks, 10, like, as Mr. Horner said, where does that start and stop? That's what, at law, someone would say that renders that unenforceable. And the point of this is to adopt something that's enforceable. The Planning Commission has heard this a number of times, you know, lay out clear rules of the road and people will follow them. I mean, they have to. And then things that, you know, Mr. Sinclair pointed out that he's never seen, I guess, a stand of all Bradford pears, since we're picking on Bradford pears. And I haven't either seen a complete forest of invasive species. But I will defend Mr. Horner and say, but you'll see under the definition that's in the code, you're going to see edges along fields that are probably predominantly invasive species for the reasons that Mr. Wall said, talked about the edge. That's where invasive species are when they're that thin, narrow, but if it somehow met the 10,000 square feet, I don't think that's the purpose, and that's not, I don't think, what Sussex County is seeking to accomplish. And that, moving a little bit further into the ordinance, to me, that where the definition, not having a clear definition, and I'm trying to get to the line here, it's line 475. It indicates, and frankly, it was on one of the slides that Mr. Robertson reviewed at the outset. It says the trees and vegetation located within any forest or mitigation area shall be free of defects and in good health prior to the issuance of substantial completion in accordance with 99-31 of the code, and it goes on from there. Well, what if the forest wasn't healthy in the first place? And that's where, to me, the definition of a forest is and how you define that is key and important, because it may be that that was a lot of invasive species, and it may be that there was a lot of downfall, you know, things that, you know, were on the base, which is good for certain types of ecological benefits. But what does that mean? And how, you know, I understand if someone is doing mitigation, that you could measure whether or not the trees look like they're growing and actually, you know, thriving in whatever place they've been planted. But to say that the existing forest has to be free of defects and in good health seems like a problem with the definition of the word forest. Or maybe that needs to be stricken from a mitigation section that says what you're looking at when there's mitigation. And again, that it all relates in my mind back to, I think every speaker that you've heard, from Mr. Wall's comments, Mr. Horner, Mr. Sinclair, everyone has talked about the definition of forest. And I think it needs to have the qualitative components that have been referenced here. The other thing I wanted to do was to support the fee in lieu concept that you heard about through Mr. Horner. As the Planning Commission's discussion just unfolded a moment ago, certainly there are so many factors, I'll use Mr. Wall's term, so many layers in a development process and project, from the stormwater to the important ecological resources, that sometimes it may just make sense for it to be there for these other reasons that are important as well. Saying that there has to be this replanting, there probably is greater ecological value in preserving existing forest. And then again, setting that, there was a discussion about, you know, what the right value would be, but setting that at the right value would be important. But again, a fee in lieu concept is better, in my opinion, than randomly planting trees. And the municipality will remain nameless. But one of the first municipalities to have a tree ordinance struggles with locations to plant trees. If you've, I know Mr. Robertson probably has, he represents a lot of people in the city of Rehoboth Beach, so I will name it, but they do have a tree ordinance, and they struggle to find places to plant trees that are appropriate when someone has to do, you know, they can't, you know, they, whatever redevelopment they're doing of their site. And so, it, you know, what you ultimately end up with is trees, I'll use Mr. Sinclair's words, with the right tree in the right place, you just end up with a tree somewhere where it may not make sense or have any real meaning or true ecological benefit. I think Mr. Sinclair would argue that every tree has a great benefit. I understand that. Right, except for a Bradford.
We can add olive trees to that list, I believe.
But anyway, to support the fee in lieu concept, again, there are, to me, just better places for certain trees than other trees and locations for those trees. But largely, it's a common, a definitional concern.
I'll just say on the fee in lieu, you know, that was, and we can talk about putting it back in, or if the commission wants that to be explored more by county council. The discussion was a good one, though, because it comes down, and I think it kind of was part of what everybody's talking about, which is, you know, you don't want it to just become a strictly economic decision that you're losing existing forest, you know, that it's just cheaper to just do that. So there has to be some relationship between the fee and the trees you're preserving off-site, you know, so it's just not some payment that sort of goes nowhere and doesn't accomplish anything, you know. I don't want, it's not a penalty. But it's not also so cheap that just everybody's doing that. You know, it's finding the right balance, I would think. I don't know if, Mr. Hutt, if you would agree with that. I don't know that I said anything real super relevant, but. I think Mr. Sinclair mentioned this, is, you know, rather than just paying the fee and preserving some trees, you know, you want to at least have somebody have to make the decision, okay, should we preserve these trees on this site because that's worthwhile to do that, you know, versus, well, I'm just going to pay a fee.
And I was going to say, I think we're suggesting that there should be a report that's presented with every application, that here's our forestry report.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Maybe that's where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what this says, and it is, so.
Yeah.
If it's a very poor quality forest, and there's better quality forest that could be preserved, that probably is the right trade-off to make, so yes.
But that's a big if in my mind, because when you look at, you know, the fee in lieu of, I think it's great, but I also look at, if you're looking at, we'll say farmland preservation, for example, or any other kind of forest that may go with that, or woods, if you will. I think there's a lot of people, even I think goes hand in hand, but the farmland preservation thing, I think there's a lot of people now that are looking back and are saying, maybe we shouldn't have done that. I'm glad they did, because it's holding on to that. But when you're looking at the value, so you're saying you want to take like this growth area or somewhere where it's like highly desirable to be developed. And they're saying, well, we would love to just be able to pay this and you go somewhere else, right? But there's nowhere in that immediate area. So again, do you take that and say, well, here's X amount of thousands of dollars, now go to Gumboro and good luck?
I think you would have to attach some condition that it be within a certain number of miles of wherever the development site is, otherwise it wouldn't be workable, right?
So would that be?
Otherwise, like, all the preservation is gonna happen in the western part of the county, which doesn't make sense.
So in my mind, that's like the only way that that's feasible, is it already has to be lined up. It's not just like, and I know that, you know, it's going to take 10 developments funding to be able to do that one piece, just, or something like that, you know?
Well, I think you would have to charge a fee substantial enough to be able to acquire the amount of forested land and preserve it that is equal to what that site would have been required to preserve.
Yeah. I just think
that's the only way you could do it, I think, right?
But it's kind of easier to pass the buck, and you know, I'm going to use that lightly but or loosely.
Well, but what Mr. Horner suggested, I think, you know, because if a developer property owner is doing it, that can be manipulated too easily. I mean, you know, just because, you know, you would just go pay for land that would never be developed anyway, you know, at some nominal value, and then you haven't accomplished anything. But what was proposed was that it would go into a fund that's administered by the county, you know, almost like a forest preservation fund administered by the county. The county would go out and find the land, you know, and do it. But you're right, there has to be
land available.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's got to be somehow dollar to dollar, you know, so it's worthwhile. Yeah.
That's what I think you're suggesting more, is a dollar to dollar.
Yes.
Okay.
And not necessarily to acquire it fee simple, like Mr. Horner said, just even just the easement, you know, value of it. So, but yeah, whatever it is, it has to be substantial enough that it's, you know, we're not just losing forest and not getting anything.
Right.
If that's, you know, the way this whole thing goes.
Yeah.
Well received points.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Glad you woke up. It's not going to hear the end of that. All right. Is there anyone else? Oh, sure.
I have a rhetorical question while this gentleman's walking up. I feel like every forest at some point was invasive. I mean, like...
For sure.
Or it could even be poor, right?
Yeah,
because,
right.
I mean, what... Or unhealthy.
Right.
You hope that it's going to come back.
Right.
But I guess it doesn't always mean it does. You know, I think about... There's some properties down on the way to Prime Hook that they had some saltwater overflow, and they're terrible. But does that ever come back?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that's a different... Yeah.
Good afternoon. I had not prepared to speak, but a couple of things came up. One specifically.
Give us your name for the record, please.
Rich Barrasso from Milton. I have a question. Having served on the resource protection work group for, I guess, about 10, 12 months, and I think both Jamie and Vince can remember, we agonized over G, which was the buffer options.
Yeah.
And for months,
I can't remember what G was off the top of my head, but yeah, no.
We agonized over it. I guess here's my question. So in 115, 193, G is a section on buffer options.
Is that the one where you like offsite or the other
Correct.
Side of the stream?
Yeah. Correct. So there was a number of different ways that easements could be used to take the place of reducing the resource buffer. My question, and I guess, Jamie, you'd be the best to address this. Have there been any buffer options exercised based on that ordinance?
So we've definitely seen options in terms of buffer averaging.
Yeah, averaging, yes.
I can't think of one way where there's been off-site through an easement. Because everyone just wants to put it on-site and use the averaging and
make
it work. I can't think of one. There's definitely been discussions, but I can't think of an actual formal subdivision that has
come through
and used it. I'd have to do some digging, but off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
Right. That was my only question. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Anyone else? No? Okay. Any other comments from you? No?
I agree with some of the points that were made around the definition of forest. I hope that could be refined. Applying the same look back to existing forest or what might have been existing forest in alignment with the buffer requirement to do so seems like it would make sense and be more consistent.
Yep.
What do you folks think?
I agree with that. And back to the point I made earlier when I said that about forest assessment, I mean like a professional person that can determine.
Yeah, and I mean,
like we had the archaeology study and all of that. And I hate to put one more thing on your checklist, Jamie, but it's.
Well, I mean, to some extent, they already have to do that with the perimeter buffer requirements. And we didn't go into the, you know, the nitty gritty on this, but I mean, it's defined who has to do the forest stand delineation. It's a licensed landscape architect, certified arborist, or licensed forester, or forester designated by the Society of American Forester as a certified forester. So there's, you know, you need to have credentials to be able to do that. So.
Okay.
One, because there were some, as you said, there were some real good points made. I was taking notes. Well, it sounds like Mr. Horner submitted a letter, so we'll look at that. We have the Preservation Coalition's sort of line by line, not sort of, it is line by line suggestions. We'll look at that. Which was part of Mr. Sinclair's presentation. And Mr. Hutt made some specific line criteria. So we'll look at all that, and I'd ask you all to do that too. And, you know, I mean, there were some that are, I think, fairly obvious, like the definition. That needs some work.
Yeah, that needs work.
On the fee in lieu part, super high level, is that something you all want to explore? Because we can look at that. I mean, it's going to come down to the details, but, you know, if you want us to take a look at maybe some language to consider. And I don't know that we need to finalize it, you know, but if we could have some sample language or suggestion to go to county council with, you know.
Yeah, so. I think we should.
I think it'd be helpful.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yep.
And there was some language that was floated when the working group wrapped up. Some of the members of the individual members of the working group put together sort of all of the recommendations into a complete renovation of chapter 115, and that fee in lieu was in that, so there's already a bit of a starting point. I don't know that it goes as far as what we talked about today, but the point being, we don't have to, I don't think, invent it from scratch. So, all right.
It does seem like anything like that, though, you do need to sort of, you don't want to run into the Rehoboth example where you can't find a parcel to actually reforest. But, you know, you would want to make sure you're charging enough to be able to acquire land somewhere in proximity to the site being developed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not really getting the value that you should for the county.
In the,
not getting the trade,
in
yeah.
One of them, is it, I can't remember now without looking, there's within the watershed, I think.
Hydraulic units.
Yeah, Huck. It's in the code, you know, so there's a set geographical area that you have to stay within. So, the other thing, Mr. Horner mentioned, I'm going to look at his letter. We made that conscious decision that we're not doing anything if you can count the perimeter buffer, you know, towards the forest preservation. And both the perimeter buffer and the forest preservation count towards your open space numbers that you have to have, too. So it's not, that's, at least open space and forest preservation are not stacked. They work together.
Which actually, that brings up a good point. I think someone did misunderstand or there was some confusion about that, so I'm glad that you clarified that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I'll look at that example. But again, the purpose of this was if the perimeter buffer takes up your 30%, for example, or close to it anyway, you know, in the growth area, then what have we done? No. You know, same thing with the rural area as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that one.
And maybe there's a middle ground, too. I don't know. But that was the reason for that. So
I believe there were multiple suggestions to reduce the tree diameter requirements to 2.5 inches from 3.5.
Yeah.
That seems rational to me. Transplanting larger trees tends to not succeed as well, at least in my personal experience.
It looks nice up front, but, yeah, you're right. If it
a lot of them die.
For 6 months and it dies, then what have you done? You're backing up.
Yeah, one of the developments.
And to the maintenance point that someone made as well. Yeah.
They planted a bunch of larger pines in the development that I drive by every day, and several of those have failed where they probably would have been fine if they
Much harder to source as well. Those large trees are much harder to source as well.
Yes.
For the quantity.
You would know.
Yeah.
I never thought of that, though.
Professionally speaking, yeah.
Harder to source, probably harder to get, transport.
Well, they're pain to plant, and they tend to want to fall over more easily with gusts of wind that we have around here. So.
Yeah. And I would like to add to them, I think Mr. Wall made a lot of good points from a preservation side and also the construction side. So things to consider both.
I will say, you know, that we got a lot of work to do on this and we've got a comp plan coming up, but there's something to be said for going back and looking at the grading requirements, see if that can be tweaked, and also the street design requirements. Part of what we're getting with this on the street design requirements is where the swales go and the geometry of sidewalks in relation to curb and gutter and the street widths. And that, I think, ties into street tree issues, but this doesn't have anything to do with trees, but we've got really narrow streets now in our subdivisions that, you know, just make it tight to do anything with.
I agree.
Anyhow.
And then you end up with people parking on those streets,
yep.
And then you can't get EMS.
Right. Or parking where you want to put the trees, you know, on those strips of land.
Well, and that's not even thinking about, you know, 10, 15 years, all of a sudden that tree has, in that green strip that's surrounded by two hard surfaces, that tree's going to move something. Then you're creating tripping hazards and parking hazards. And there's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah, so I agree with that completely. If you're planting the wrong kind of trees, you want small ornamental ones that are obviously not the Bradford pears.
Who knew? All right.
Out of curiosity, like from nurseries and Bradford, they have such a bad reputation. Can you get them really anymore?
I think it was like in January with the state, with the NLP. They're like, no, you can't even sell them. Nurseries aren't going to be able to have them anymore or anything.
Yeah.
That's good because the Bradford pear is officially not the tree of Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission.
Except for
not according to me.
Hey, look, I planted several of them and then I saw the consequences of it in a different state. So.
Well, other than them snapping, what's the problem with them?
The seeds from them spread everywhere by birds, and then they come up. It's you get all these spindly trees that grow up along the edges of forests, and I saw it happen on my own property, and I was kicking myself.
They overtake the good trees.
Not here. I did this in Central Virginia. That's where I did all my damage.
Good, you left it behind you.
All right.
Exactly.
So can we get a motion on this? Mr. Collins, do you want to?
So I move that we, what is the motion for this? I move that we approve this with suggested changes.
Well, no, I would think defer it, because I want to look at Mr. Warner's information and also, well, everything we heard, the Preservation Coalition's information. What we'll do, I don't think we need to hold the record open. I mean, the record's still open for council.
Yeah.
We've heard some good information for this. I would just close the record and defer action. What I would say is, well, I guess we can put it back on the next meeting, you know, whether we're ready to, you know, roll with discussions.
I need the name. All right, Madam Chair, I move that we defer action on ordinance 26-05.
Second.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded to defer action on ordinance number 2605. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you.